This is another Side of Midnight with Walter Sterling. Now, to the Bernard McGurk Studios, here's Walter Sterling.
800-848-9222, 800-848-9222. We've been exposing a lot of the conspiracies against America's truckers. Inexcusable. The reason you and I have food is because of America's truckers. You're driving a truck. You work in the trucking industry. I need to talk with you at 800-848-9222. Red Apple Audio Networks, another Side of Midnight. How many sides are there? Is it like the pyramids where it looks like there are three sides, but then when you're in an airplane looking down, you realize that there are six sides? Is that what it's like? Is that what another Side of Midnight is like? There's a comet or meteor headed toward us right now and headed toward the sun right now. And a major professor at Harvard University, not some community college, not a clown, not a professional talk show guest, a major Harvard professor, Professor Loeb, has studied this comet headed toward us. And his conclusion is, well, it's just amazing. Listen to this. Professor Avi Loeb is a real professor, not at a community college. He's at Harvard. And when he speaks, the entire scientific space astrophysics community listens. You and I have heard about this Atlas. What is it? X-13. What's the number there?
3I Atlas. It's the third interstellar object from outside the solar system that was discovered on July 1st, 2025.
A third interstellar object from outside the solar system that has come into our solar system. You, Professor, have discovered something about this object. You call it a meteor or a comet or neither?
No. Well, a meteor is an object that collides with Earth, and this one did not really collide with Earth. It was passing through the inner solar system. It was very bright and roughly the size of a city, about 2 kilometers in diameter. What was unusual about it is that it arrived within 5 degrees of the plane of the planets around the sun. And that's a chance of 1 in 500. Nevertheless, it came as if it was targeting the inner solar system, and there were questions about the various anomalies. I listed 22 of them, very unusual facts about this object, either some geometric features that it exhibited or a composition that it had, which was very unusual. Like, it had the nickel without iron, and the only other place where we see that is in industrially produced nickel alloys. There were jets, for example, 3 jets coming from its nucleus that were symmetrically separated on the sky. So a number of questions that we don't have answers to. I decided to define a classification scale for interstellar objects like 3A Atlas, where 0 implies that it's a natural object like a comet or an asteroid, a rock or an iceberg. And 10 means that it could be alien technology, a probe that was sent from another civilization, which, of course, would mean that we might not be at the top of the food chain within the Milky Way galaxy. That's a possibility that we should contemplate. And the best way to find out is to see if there is any probe heading our way, similar to the Voyager spacecraft that we launched that are making their way right now out of the solar system.
Professor Loeb, it's important for me to emphasize at this point that you're not a Scientific America writer. You're not a popular mechanics writer. You're not a late night talk show host. You're a Harvard professor, and you find anomalies about this object from outside of our solar system that makes you go, this is amazing. This is really, and you've come up with a classification scale that suggests that maybe this is made by an intelligent civilization and sent toward us. Now, recently, this week, you revealed to the scientific community something else about this object, about atomic radioactive water that you believe is on it.
Yeah, so there was a detection of deuterium, which is an isotope of hydrogen, And in the universe, the abundance of deuterium is one part in 40,000 relative to hydrogen. But on this object 3I Atlas, the abundance was a few percent, one part in 30. So it's an enhancement by a factor of 1,000 relative to the cosmic abundance. And the question is why? And we all know that deuterium is a very useful fuel for fusion. And the question is whether there is anything technological on this object. I'm not saying there is. I mean, it most likely is an iceberg that happens to have unusual composition and unusual characteristics in terms of its arrival to the solar system, the fact that it came close to Mars and Jupiter and all kinds of other anomalies. But we have to be aware of the possibility of a black swan event, meaning something we don't suspect that happens to have a big impact on humanity. And that's a rare situation when you do scientific research. Most of the time, as an astronomer, I study objects that are very far away that have no impact on our daily lives. But this is one such example where we do have to pay attention. And there was a previous object called Oumuamua discovered in 2017, which was also very peculiar. The amount of light from the sun that was reflected from it changed by a factor of 10 as it was tumbling every 8 hours. It meant that it has a very extreme shape, most likely flat, and it was pushed away from the sun by some mysterious force without shedding any gas or dust that we could see. And so the question is, what's propelling it? And
Professor Loeb, Harvard professor, what do you think is propelling that?
I suggested that it may be just the sunlight pushing it. And in fact, 3 years after Oumuamua was discovered, the same telescope in Hawaii that discovered it found another object pushed by reflecting sunlight. And that one happened to be a rocket booster that was launched by NASA in 1966. And we understood that it must be that because it was made of stainless steel and it was following the path of that rocket booster. And we know that it's technological because we produced it. The question is, who produced Oumuamua? And that remains an open question. And all I'm saying is that comet experts that are used to identifying rocks in the sky or icebergs in the sky, they should expand their training data sets to include also technological objects, because we know that we polluted space with our objects, and so another civilization might have done that long ago, billions of years ago.
Right. Now, Professor Loeb, this object that has radioactive fluid on it, that you believe is radioactive fluid on it, if it hit Earth, would it be like the radiation of an atomic bomb? Would it be dangerous if we touched it? Would the person become poisoned? What's your opinion?
Well, in fact, there was cyanide that in the plume of gas around the 3I Atlas that was detected. That's quite poisonous. It was in the form of gas. And we just don't know whether 3I Atlas released fragments that could hit the Earth. In fact, there was a report this week that the number of meteor fireballs in our atmosphere had a dramatic surge in recent months. And that's the time when the Earth passed closest to the path of 3I Atlas. And so an interesting question is whether we are seeing some fragments of rocks. These are small, a few inches in size, that belong to 3I Atlas that are colliding with Earth right now. That remains to be seen. It's not clear. But all in all, there is no risk to Earth that was posed by 3I Atlas. And it was just a very peculiar object. And there is an observatory in Chile called the Rubin Observatory that is using a 3.2 gigapixel camera to monitor the sky, the southern sky. And it's expected to discover dozens of objects like 3I Atlas or Oumuamua in the coming decades. So, as always in science, we should not assume anything, just observe and figure out, because nature could surprise us. And There is, of course, also the data that the U.S. government may have collected over the decades, and that's data that is classified within
but
the
it
Pentagon.
Shouldn't,
within,
it shouldn't be yeah. classified to you. You're an incredibly credible gentleman, an expert, a Harvard professor. They should be sharing it with you to help decide what it is, to help classify it, to help it make sense, that you'd be brilliant at. Your colleagues in academia, your colleagues, do they respect you? Do they embrace your theories? Or is there always some trouble in the cafeteria?
No, I mean, I gave 2 weeks ago a colloquium at Harvard about my research, and it was very well received. And people who know me realize that I'm driven by my curiosity. And, you know, I am not trying to get as many likes as possible. I don't care about it. And in fact, what drives me is to understand our cosmic neighborhood and whether we have a neighbor. We know of billions of Earth-Sun analogs, most of which were born billions of years before the solar system. And so it's quite possible that we have a sibling in our family of intelligent civilizations out there. And it's also possible that the U.S. government collected already some data indicating that. There was some discussion about that by former President Obama and later President Trump, who directed the Pentagon to release classified information about extraterrestrial life and intelligence. And I very much look forward to any such information. I'll be delighted to help government figure out if they have objects they don't fully understand. Because at the very least, it's a matter of national security. If these objects are human-made, we should understand them. And if they're not human-made, they could be represent the biggest discovery ever made.
The biggest discovery.
The future of humanity.
You're right. The biggest discovery ever made. Avi Loeb, professor, Harvard University, revealing the secrets of the universe for you. Another Side of Midnight, Walter Sterling. 800-848-9222. Professor Loeb, 800-848-9222. I have presented to you a cornucopia of popular topics tonight that it's time for you to share your opinion and your feelings about. They include this stuff coming toward Earth that's covered by radioactive waste that the professor says if it came toward Earth, it's like an atomic bomb. You and I have talked with Meredith and Megan, Meredith, my kid, about the impact of this insanely stupid court case this week that blamed Facebook and Instagram for corrupting a teenage girl and gave the responsibility for that teenage girl to an algorithm. Sorry, that's a parent's responsibility. How the hell could that happen? And then Gord McNeil, he's the head of the Truckers Association, and he says truckers are the victims of conspiracy, a vicious conspiracy to put them out of business. My phone number is 800-848-9222. Ed Babylon, welcome to Another Side of Midnight. How many sides are there?
In Babylon?
Yes, how many sides to Babylon are there? Because I've been to Babylon, Long Island, and that was one visit too many, yeah.
Well, there's North Babylon, West Babylon, there's Babylon proper, the Village of Babylon.
Listen, don't try to make yourself into the Great Gatsby. There aren't that many sides of your town that anybody would care about it.
Nor am I a geographer. Walter, I wanted to see you mentioned in the beginning about Ma Bell and the building without windows. My uncle Jerry Meade was in the Office of Secret Service. And after the war, he was offered a job in Washington on the startup of the CIA. And he didn't take that. So ultimately, they offered him a job with Ma Bell. Are they connected, all of them?
Well, the reason I discussed, Ed, thank you for the call. The reason I discussed what I discussed was before the Bell system was broken up, all of the local phone company buildings, all of them, whatever they were called, Bell Telephone, Southern Bell, Pacific Bell, that's what they were originally called. All of those buildings had no signage on the outside, none of them, and they had blackout windows. There was no sign in any city that said this is the phone company building, none. and blackout windows, just microwave antennas on the roof. That's the only way you knew those were the phone company. That was it. 20 past the hour with Walter M. Sterling, yet another side of midnight on the Red Apple Audio Networks.
All night long, this is Another Side of Midnight with Walter Sterling.
Here in Key West, we were out before it was in. In this open and inclusive paradise, you can be yourself, make new friends, and savor our live and let live vibe. With LGBTQ plus friendly accommodations, our legendary nightlife, and year-round activities and events, it's always a good time to come as you are. Key West, close to perfect, far from normal.
Every day, the world gets a little weirder and a lot more awesome. Cool Stuff Daily takes a look at everything from mining in space to the latest in the fight against cancer to how AI is, well, basically changing everything. It's all the cool stuff you didn't know you needed to know. Join us for Cool Stuff Daily as we take a quick look at science, tech, and the wait, what stories that make you sound way smarter at dinner. Subscribe to Cool Stuff Daily now, because the future's happening fast, and it's way too fun to miss.
It's Another Side of Midnight with Walter Sterling. Now, to the Bernard McGurk Studios, here's Walter Sterling.
Another Side of Midnight, Walter Sterling. There's a great cultural divide between what the world you know and the world that college students know. And you think you're talking to them, and you think you're relating to them, but I promise you, you're not. You might be shocked to know that most people in college today cannot read an analog clock. Now, my daughter Meredith is here, and she goes to Brooklyn College, and her friend Meg is here, and she's in the Army Reserve. But she refuses to give up any military secrets. Therefore, we will talk about other issues. We will talk about non-military issues. But now, Meredith, why do you think that so many people who are in college, in fact, cannot read an analog clock?
I know how to read an analog clock.
Would you blame your parents for that?
No. I don't think that my parents taught me how to read an analog clock. I think that it was the school system. But if anything, maybe people that are a little bit younger than me, still college students, maybe don't know how to read an analog clock. But I don't know. I don't know much about this topic because I know how to read an analog clock.
Of course you do. You're properly raised. Now, Megan, the other technological divide is if you put most college students, most people your age, in front of a traditional telephone with a dial, they have no idea how to make a phone call. Are you aware of that?
Yeah, I actually had this issue myself.
Did you? Please share.
Yeah. I had a job where the primary focus of the job was just answering the phone. And it was just literally the phone with the cord and everything.
Yeah.
You got to pick it up. I didn't know how to, like, put it on hold, how to switch calls if someone was calling, how to put someone on, like, a separate line if you need to switch between callers or anything like that. It took me a while to figure that out.
And, Megan, now, do you know how to use a traditional phone?
Yeah.
The other interesting fact is that many school systems made the horrendous mistake of thinking that they needed to take cell phones away from kids in high school and hold them for the day and then give them back at the end of the day. Well, the side effect of that they did not anticipate was that without their cell phones, most kids couldn't tell time. They didn't know what time it was. They always got their time from their phone. But without a phone, they couldn't tell the time.
I went to a high school where we weren't allowed to have our phones during the day, besides lunchtime. But honestly, I agree with it. I thought it was a great thing. We all agreed. I graduated a class of 28. 28 students. None of us had our phones besides if we were switching between classes and we had time to go to our locker, check our phone, or lunchtime. And we all thought, like, not having phones during school was, like, a great thing to have. Like, even though, like, my class was small, we all got along really well. We actually, like, talked and socialized, which is, like, a thing that, like, people don't really do because they're just, like, glued to their phones in school. But, yeah, we loved, like, not having our phones, actually.
I feel like it would have been good to make it a rule that, you know, you had to keep your cell phones in your lockers in my high school, because I remember most of it of just being on my phone a lot. And I think I struggled in school because I couldn't pay attention and I was on my phone. So I would agree with that. I'm like 50. I understand both sides of it, though.
What's the bad side of taking away the phones?
I guess not. If it's in your locker, then you have the ability to go to your locker and text your parents if something's happening. You know, like that would be the only thing, is like communication with family. But other than that, I guess I don't know.
Facebook lost a big lawsuit this week. And the lawsuit that they and I think another company lost was that they had designed software that was so intriguing and appealing to children that kids didn't really have any control over whether or not they were on the software. They were obsessed with it. It damaged their ability to learn, their self-worth, all sorts of issues. And I didn't think Facebook would lose that trial, but they lost that trial. How do you feel about that?
What is this?
Facebook and I think TikTok.
Yeah.
No, I'm sorry. Facebook and Instagram, owned by the same company.
Yes.
You scroll.
Oh.
You do the scrolling.
Yeah.
And they know that you do the scrolling, and they make it as appealing as they can.
Oh,
they
the algorithm?
Yeah, they make you want to scroll.
Yeah.
But they say, in court, they lost when they said, no, it doesn't hurt kids. How does this hurt kids? But it did. And the court said, no, this hurts children, and here's how it hurts children. And they lost it. I didn't think they should have lost it. How do you feel?
I'd say it does hurt children, too.
How?
I would say it weakens the attention span of a child.
Right.
It weakens my attention span. It, you know, it's an addicting thing. You're scrolling and finding these quick clips of things that you find interesting. And if you like it, then it gets that, the algorithm gets that, and it shows you more of that thing. And so you're just constantly scrolling for more and more things that release these, like, dopamine receptors in your brain that are telling you that this is good and you like this. And that can shorten a child's attention span. It'll make them more bored of things that they need, like school or learning or socialization, you know? Like, it will make that harder for them because they are addicted to scrolling on TikTok or Instagram or whatever, you know?
I say it's the parents' responsibility. The argument was this is bad for kids. Kids are under 18. It's very clear who's responsible for those kids. I don't think Mark Zuckerberg's responsible for those kids.
I agree. It's up to the parents. But they also do display certain, you know, videos or stuff that are pointed towards children and not pointed towards adults. They don't have age limits on their... they do have age limits, don't they?
Self-imposed.
Yeah.
Like you have to program it in and you have to tell the truth about your age, which you never do.
It's a complicated thing, I guess.
Really? Now, Meg, who's in the Army Reserves, do you feel that military video games are useful for you in terms of training? Did it help you learn how military action, army movements work?
I grew up playing like Black Ops 2, like Call of Duty.
Right.
And it's just like very inaccurate because the military is just so vast with like training and different tasks you might have to do. It's not just like running around with a gun and shooting someone 20 different times and then dying 20 different times and you just come back to life. It's just so much more than that. But I mean, like, there was a new game that came out a couple years ago, Ready or Not. I think, like, that's pretty accurate with, like, room clearing and stuff like that. That's, like, the most accurate thing I've seen.
Why was it accurate? Ready or Not, why was that accurate?
It's a slow-paced game. You can't run in it at all. And it gives you, like, realistic scenarios. Like, they have a scenario where it's kind of, like, recreating, like, the Pulse nightclub shooting. And it, like, really shows, like, the effects of what people have to see when they respond to stuff like that, like bodies and people, like, crying out for help. So I feel like that, in, like, that sense is more accurate because I think that's just, like, one thing people forget that people who are, like, a first responder have to see.
Which video games do you like, Meredith?
I like Grand Theft Auto and The Sims. The Sims 3 and The Sims 4.
Now, in Grand Theft Auto, did you learn how to steal a car?
Yes, I steal cars all the time.
And you sell them for parts?
No, I just steal them and then I crash them.
The game I don't understand that you're all obsessed with is Minecraft.
Yes.
I don't understand that because I asked the stupidest question of you and Dorothy. I said, how do you win? And you're both looking at me like, you don't win. I'm like, okay, so what are we doing?
Well, you always have a goal that you're building towards. Normally, the main thing is to kill the Ender Dragon, which is, like, it takes a while. You have to work up to getting all the supplies you need, building your house, you know, all of this stuff to kill the Ender Dragon. And that's sort of, like, kind of the end of the game, but it's not. There's still more to do after that.
Of course there is. Is it that you're... What is it? You're building a city, a village?
No,
what are you doing?
You're just building a life.
Yeah.
Surviving.
And what about Toca Boca that Samantha plays all the time and Roblox? What's the deal with those?
I don't know about Toca Boca. That's like a game on App Store that they have like a bunch of little games. I think I played those when I was little. But Roblox has tons of games of different genres. I don't know. You know about Roblox.
Yeah.
What do you do on Roblox, Meg? What do you do?
And
I'm asking because parents are aware of what their kids are playing, but they have no idea what the appeal is or what actually goes on. They just, well, I'm playing Roblox. Well, I'm playing Toca Boca. Well, I'm playing Sims. Okay. But we don't know what that means.
I'll say at least for Roblox, I don't think I would play Roblox alone. I think Roblox is sort of kind of more of a social thing. Like, you play it with your friends, and it's more fun if you play it with your friends.
The issue with Roblox is that they're monetizing games now. So they're giving creators of these games, and they create these, like, fast, like, quick games that match, like, the trends and stuff. And it kind of just is, like, just looks like a cash grab to me now for, like, people who are making these games trying to make profit off of it. And now Roblox is just kind of filled with, like, these just, like, pointless trash games just because people want to make money off of it, which people make a lot of money off of it, actually.
How do you make money off it? How do you make money?
It's the currency that Roblox uses to buy, like, outfits, game perks, Robux is what it's called, and you buy it with real money. So if you buy Robux and you spend it in a game, then the creator basically gets, I believe... I could be wrong, but I believe they get the money that, the real money from Robux.
I think Sam has bought Robux before.
Robux is a considerable investment from 14-year-old Samantha, yes. Yes.
Yeah, and she uses that to buy outfits for her character.
What is it that parents need to understand about these games and about these damn kids today?
It's a new hobby. It's just like any hobby that you had when you were a kid, but now it's new. It's a game, and it sends you into your own little world where you can do whatever you want. It's like watching TV, but it's more interactive, you know?
Meredith, Brooklyn College student, Megan, Army Reserve, security detail expert. Thank you both for being on Sterling every damn night. 800-848-9222. Megan, a student at Rutgers, and Meredith, a student at Brooklyn College, thank you for getting the old people up to date. I appreciate it. 800-848-9222. I was appalled. I am appalled that a court case went against Facebook, Instagram, that said Facebook and Instagram are the ones responsible for addictive behavior among teenagers using their sites. Addictive behavior, destroying their social lives, destroying their academic lives, all of that. I'm like, well, no, that's the parents' responsibility. It's not Facebook's responsibility. It's not Instagram's responsibility. That is the parents' responsibility. I ask the same question. I've never heard this. Where the hell were the parents with all those poor Epstein girls? Where were those parents? 14, 15-year-olds. It's horrible. They got on planes. They went to islands. What parent let them on a plane? And then I hear the most insane thing, where I hear, well, you know, a lot of those parents, they were alcoholics or drug addicts. Yeah, they were responsible for that, too. That's what they were also responsible for, being drug addicts and alcoholics. 35 minutes past the hour, 35 minutes past the hour with Walter Sterling on another side of Midnight. How many sides of Midnight are there? And now let's you and I talk to Matthias Boom Boom in Hollywood, who's our expert on all things movie and entertainment gossip. Matthias, welcome to another side of Midnight. Hi. Hello, Matthias.
I was quite moved, Walter. Nice to be with you here on WABC. Yeah. I was quite moved at the beginning of the show when you actually shared a story that I have also experienced, going into the bank and them telling you that you're dead.
Did that happen to you, too?
It happened to me, too. Is it limited to broadcasters? I don't know, but I have to tell you, it was very strange, and I had to prove, no, I, in fact, am still alive, and why did you close my account? The local NBC affiliate did an actual piece on it. I'll forward it to you for a good laugh.
Who did you have to prove it to, specifically at the bank? Who did you have to prove that you're alive to?
Well, I just had to go to the bank manager. Here's my identification, and here I am. I had closed another account recently because my mother had passed away, and they accidentally closed mine instead.
Well, you got off easy because they could not accept an in-person I'm alive. I had to call the estate division of Chase. I had to call the estate division, speak to people in the estate division, six different people I was bounced around to, and I started getting mail saying, to the estate of Walter Sterling.
No, not something you want to see. My goodness. Well, I have to tell you that if it hadn't been for the NBC new affiliate news piece, I wouldn't have gotten the president of the bank to apologize to me in person and have me come down to meet him and take care of it.
But you
otherwise,
see,
I may still be in the quagmire of hell.
You would have been, it would have been, and you can see the challenge to us mortals when we have trouble with Chase. And we don't have a news crew behind us to fix it. It's a different world. You live in an entirely different world.
Well, yes. Okay.
Now, listen, what's going on with the movies? What movie should we see? And what gossip do you have?
Well, first of all, there was an actor that I really liked, a character actor, James Tolkan. You may remember from Top Gun or Back to the Future. He passed away yesterday at 94 years of age. He sort of looked like a Donald Pleasance type, you know, short, beady eyes, bald head, but was a commanding presence in countless movies. And he died at 93. I don't know exactly what he died of, but at 94, rather, according to Variety. And at 94, it's a pretty good run. But Back to the Future, TV, he was on TV in a show in the 60s called Naked City, Bone Tomahawk, and I think most people remember him from Back to the Future and Top Gun. But he was a fine actor and had a menacing presence, and I'm sorry to see him go.
And what other information do you have? Which movies do you like?
Well, we've got a new picture out that's called Fantasy Life. This is playing over at the Angelica Film Center. It's written by, directed, and starring Matthew Scheer. Now, I don't know if you know Matthew Scheer.
No.
He's a nice young Jewish actor. He was first in the movie opposite Greta Gerwig in Noah Baumbach's Mistress America. He's done a couple of TV things, like he was Detective Lucas Isaacson in TNT's The Alienist, based on the novel of the same name by Caleb Carr. Anyway, in this movie, he's a very anxious law school student. He drops out and confesses haunting thoughts about his Jewish faith to a psychiatrist who's played by Judd Hirsch. Now, he's unable to pay his bills, so the psychiatrist's wife suggests he help out the doctor's family, babysitting their three granddaughters. And after a rather bumpy first babysitting gig with the girls, who were quite a handful, he's asked to return as their father's away playing music on tour. And Mom, an actress played by the gorgeous Amanda Peet, struggles to stay relevant as she's approaching middle age and deals with a rocky marriage. So what poor little Sam didn't figure out is that he was going to fall in love with Amanda Peet. And so this is a rather poignant comedy about this sad sack Sam, and he has a few hopeful moments that fall into his humdrum life, surrounded by some really great performances by Bob Balaban and Jessica Harper, who's nice to see again on the screen. But his angst and anxiety play out for laughs in this fantasy life, even though there's some touching movies moments, too. It's a very only in New York kind of story, and I thought it was nice. It was a nice picture. It was kind of fun.
What's it called?
The name of the movie is Fantasy Life.
Fantasy Life.
At the Angelica Film Center.
No stars.
No major stars. Well, you know, Amanda Peet's, she's been in a lot of stuff. She's pretty fun. But, yeah, the major stars, no. Wonderful character players like Bob Balaban and, of course, Jessica Harper, who had been a star years ago.
What was the TV series that Amanda Peet was in about a broken-down play-by-play announcer? And she owned or ran the team, and she brought him back to life. What was that one? Do you remember that? It was pretty good.
Oh, I can't recall. I know she was in Animal Room. That was her first movie with Neil Patrick Harris, but I'm just trying to think. She was in Saving Silverman, but I can't remember the television show.
More importantly, I was in a wedding that Amanda Peet attended.
Oh, yeah.
And I used to go to a restaurant where Amanda Peet was the greeter.
Well, she has very beautiful blue eyes, nice bone structure. She's really a very elegant woman.
She's very pretty. Also, she's very normal.
Well, that's nice in show business.
Not pretentious.
And unexpected.
Unexpected. Not pretentious. And maybe if she was more pretentious, she'd get more and bigger roles. Is that possible, Mateus?
Possibly, indeed. Maybe you remember as Jill St. Clair in The Whole Nine Yards. Is that it?
No.
No. Okay.
No.
Well.
No. He's the voice. The guy who starred in it is the voice of the Indian guy in The Simpsons who quit. He quit The Simpsons because that guy.
Yeah. Gosh, now what the hell? Well, I don't know, but perhaps next week we can delve in and have an answer for you.
No, this is like two old guys talking in Fort Lauderdale. This is really bad radio. This is so awful that I'm going to hang up on you now. Mateus Boom Boom Hollywood.
That's all
right. How do we find you on Facebook?
Mateus Boom Balls Hollywood on Facebook. MATIASBOMBAL apostrophe S Hollywood, like the city. Mateus Boom Balls Hollywood on Facebook. Thanks so much, Walter.
Thank you, sir. All right. Red Apple Audio Networks. There are many conspiracies you and I need to talk about. Tartaria. The evil against America's greatest, the truckers. What's being done to truckers is disgusting, appalling. The mystery object coming toward Earth covered with radioactive fluid and the conspiracy surrounding COVID. All of that and you at 800-848-9222, 800-848-9222, with Walter M. Sterling on the Red Apple Audio Networks.
All night long, this is Another Side of Midnight with Walter Sterling. It's Another Side of Midnight with Walter Sterling. Now, to the Bernard McGurk Studios, here's Walter Sterling.
Hey, Walter Sterling, this is your cousin Breezy. Listen, I think that it's time that you took a little break, so I'm going to play a song that I actually introduced years ago right here on WABC Radio. So, Walter, hit the trail, and I'll take care of business.
Stay a while, let me hold you.
conspiracy against America's truckers. A vicious conspiracy against America's truckers. And coming up in just seconds, you and I are going to talk to Gord McNeil. Gord McNeil, who's the head of one of those scary organizations that represents truckers. Right now, the largest trucking convention is taking place in Nashville. It's incredible what they are dealing with. I'll give you a quick example, and then you and I will talk to Gord McNeil. Right now, there's a certain number of hours that any given trucker is allowed to drive. If the trucker hits that moment, they are required to stop and take a half-hour rest, a 45-minute rest. They're required to stop immediately. Well, that's not a big deal. Oh, yes, it is. And here's why it is. Truckers drive throughout the country, countryside, suburban, downtown, big cities, across the country. That's where truckers go, right? Let's say they've got 10 minutes to stop until they have to stop. And oh my gosh, they're driving right into a center city, into a downtown at 8 in the morning. And then the clock goes off. They must stop. And that could mean they are in downtown in a major city on a city street at 8 in the morning, busy as hell, and they can't move. They're not allowed by, not by state law, not by an agreement with the union, by federal law, the trucker must stop. Now, who would come up with something so stupid? And there's no give on it. Who would come up with something so stupid? I know somebody who's never driven a truck. That's who's that stupid. Somebody who's never driven a truck would come up with insane rules like that. And that's why I said, you know, there's a conspiracy. It makes no sense. When something doesn't make sense, there's a reason. You ready? I know this is very technical. I hope it doesn't tax my relatives. I know it wouldn't tax you, but it would tax my relatives. When something doesn't make sense, it's because it doesn't. It's really that simple. It's common sense. Life is about common sense. The next thing and the next thing, is it makes sense? Is it reasonable? And if something doesn't jive, it doesn't settle down inside of you, that is because there is a lie at work. If your brain can't calm down, if your brain can't settle on something, if you find yourself thinking about it over and over and over again, you know why? It's because there's a lie at work, and a brain cannot settle down on a lie. You're having trouble getting to sleep? You're either trying to predict the future, which is a lie, or you're trying to rewrite the past, which is a lie. You can't do either. If you focus on the truth, today is Saturday, today is Saturday, today is Saturday, you will go right to sleep because then your brain can settle down. What has been done to the trucking industry is appalling, and now you and I are going to talk to Gord McNeil. Gord, are you there? Hi. Gord is at this big convention. He's probably surrounded by a lot of drunks. That's what happens at conventions. But the information he has is so valuable, it's worth Gord McNeil. All right, now listen, this is Gord McGill on Another Side of Midnight. Now, Gord, in addition to what you and I are going to talk about, is a known Canadian. And the reason that I knew you were Canadian is that in America, in the United States, we call it Gordon. But the minute I saw that you're Gord, I knew that you were Canadian. What is that about, by the way?
Oh, we're just lazy and we don't want to say too much.
Yeah, I don't believe that. Now, now Gord is very busy. I had to beg with his team to talk with me tonight because he's at a big convention. What's the name of the convention?
It's the Mid-America Trucking Show in Louisville, Kentucky, the world's largest trucking industry conference and trucker party.
About how many people do you think are there?
Usually they get about 55,000 people through the door over 3 days every year.
How annoyed are you that Bucky's won't allow 18-wheelers except at one stop?
I think Bucky's is doing their own thing. They have got a great product and a great system, and I understand why they want to keep some of the riffraff out.
Understood. I believe there is a conspiracy in North America against truckers. I believe
it's not a conspiracy. It's out in the open.
Please share with us the details of that horror.
The details are so much that I had to write a whole book about it. I've got this book out now called End of the Road, Inside the War on Truckers, which examines this conspiracy, which is really, like most conspiracies, a series of government, corporate, and bureaucratic mistakes, bad policy, bad economics, and then bad reactions to problems that don't actually deal with the problem, but just further propagating while pretending that they're actually fixing it, which is what government does.
On another side of Midnight, we've had a number of truckers on, and they have explained to me the rules and regulations that the trucking industry, the federal government, opposes on them. And I realize that every committee responsible for their rules and regulations is manned by people who have never driven a truck, probably have never been in a truck cab, and yet they're putting out insane rules about, gee, after this number of hours, you have to park for a half hour, and if you're stuck in the middle of a city, good luck to you. I'm like, that's all I needed to hear. It's like, you have an incredible challenge to make a living.
This is true, yes. Those people, I like to refer to them as spreadsheet brains or the email job cased. They have no experience with reality. They never get their hands dirty. They probably never sweat for a living. And yes, organizations like the Federal Motor Carrier Safety Administration, which I understand has 1,150 employees, I think maybe only one or two of them have ever driven a truck or been involved in the trucking industry in their capacity as a driver getting the work done.
In the rules and regulations, what is the, for you personally, the most draconian rule that exists over the trucking industry? The one rule, if I could get rid of this one, I'd be happy for an hour.
The electronic logging device mandate.
What's that? Explain.
It puts the eye of Sauron in your truck and eliminates your Fourth Amendment rights against unreasonable search and seizure and places you under the panopticon of state.
This is a camera inside the cab?
This is a monitoring device that tracks your every move in order that it can maintain your hours of service and prevent you from cheating. But the problem is that did not address the fundamental incentive structure by which truckers get paid. And once the ELD mandate was implemented, all of the crashes, collisions, and aggressive driving that it sought to reduce actually increased. And then because the ELD technology, the people who produce it, are allowed to self-certify with the government, all kinds of back doors were put in it, and now a lot of the gangsters that have flooded into the industry from overseas are abusing those back doors and forcing the guys who are supposed to be not working over their hours to work twice as many hours. So the ELD mandate is basically erasing your privacy as a worker and actually allowing the parasites and bottom feeders and bad actors in trucking to make things worse for the drivers who are being forced to work longer hours than they should be by law.
What did it do specifically that causes more problems in terms of safety? What is it that it has done to put drivers having to take more unsafe actions?
Right. So the problem is hours of service regulation, and the deeper problem is detention. Many truck drivers would just like to drive, and that's the only time they're being paid. Across the customers we service, many distribution centers, warehouses, grocery store chain warehouses, they eat up an enormous amount of truckers' time. This has been studied by MIT. 40% of the United States trucking fleet capacity is sitting, waiting to be loaded or unloaded at any given time. That's the real challenge. That's the real problem, which begets all of the others. And nobody's bothered dealing with that because it's easier to just punish the guys trying to do the work.
Your opinion, when a truck driver is doing their job and they're going across the country, Canada or the U.S., is there, in among drivers, is there one highway that they dread? They've got to take it, but it has the most aggressive police. It has the most aggressive radar. It is the most, the one they go, ah, please don't make me go on that highway.
America leads the world in medicine development. It matters. We get new medicines first, nearly 3 years faster. 5 million Americans go to work because we make medicines here at home. And not relying on other countries keeps us safe. But China is racing to overtake us. Will we let them, or will we choose to stay ahead? When America leads, America cures. Let's tell Washington to keep us in the lead.
Learn how at AmericaCures.com. Paid for by Pharma.
Are you stuck staring at your W-2? Are tax refund worries holding you back? You probably have FOMO, the fear of messing up. The fix? Using TurboTax on Intuit Credit Karma. They find every credit and deduction to help you get every refund dollar you deserve or your money back. It's time to overcome your fear of messing up and get your taxes done right. Start filing today in the Credit Karma app.
I mean, at the moment, there's a number of those highways, and it has less to do with the cops these days and has more to do with the dingbats that the government's been issuing CDLs to and allowed the industry to be parasitized by. So Interstate 81, going from like the Northeast down along Blue Ridge Parkway, Interstate 40, especially out west where it's just beat to crap through New Mexico and Arizona, Interstate 70 in Indiana, which just absolutely destroys your equipment, and just incredible amounts of traffic these days, which is the bigger problem for us.
Unmanned tolls, license plate readers, better or worse?
I mean, it's better to not have to slow down to pay tolls, just as long as that's not like tied into the surveillance panopticon, and quite often those things are tied together.
Explain technically what that means.
That means that like there's technology that's always tracking trucks, and it can be used to punish you rather than just collect money.
Trivia question. Why is the weigh station always closed?
Government workers are lazy.
And then as a four-wheeler, what exactly happens in the weigh station?
They'll weigh your truck and make sure that like you're, you know, within the limit, the capacity limits of your vehicle. They'll often pull you around back for an inspection and check your paperwork and inspect your truck and, like, you know, just make sure everything's safe. You know, I don't disagree with that sort of thing. It's just it gets political with who they do inspect more and who they don't.
One of the things that I've shared with the listener is I am a constant opponent to the existence of tolls. Those highways were built in the 1950s, early 1960s. They were paid off long ago. And I've read the toll rules. I've read the legislation for most of those highways as to why they have tolls and when will they come down. And it's incredible. But what most people don't realize is that when I drive from Philadelphia to Pittsburgh, that's going to be $60. When an 18-wheeler drives from Philadelphia to Pittsburgh, that's $1,000. You drive in a truck, I want to talk to you. 800-848-9222, Walter Sterling, Red Apple Audio Networks.
Is another Side of Midnight with Walter Sterling. Now, to the Bernard McGurk Studios, here's Walter Sterling.
800-848-9222, 800-848-9222. We've been exposing a lot of the conspiracies against America's truckers. Inexcusable. The reason you and I have food is because of America's truckers. You're driving a truck. You work in the trucking industry. I need to talk with you at 800-848-9222. Red Apple Audio Networks, another side of midnight. How many sides are there? Is it like the pyramids where it looks like there are three sides, but then when you're in an airplane looking down, you realize that there are six sides? Is that what it's like? Is that what another side of midnight is like? There's a comet or meteor headed toward us right now and headed toward the sun right now. And a major professor at Harvard University, not some community college, not a clown, not a professional talk show guest, a major Harvard professor, Professor Loeb, has studied this comet headed toward us And his conclusion is, well, it's just amazing. Listen to this. Professor Avi Loeb is a real professor, not at a community college. He's at Harvard. And when he speaks, the entire scientific space, astrophysics community listens. You and I have heard about this Atlas. What is it? X-13. What's the number there?
3I Atlas. It's the third interstellar object from outside the solar system that was discovered on July 1st, 2025.
The third interactive...
interstellar.
The third interstellar object. A third interstellar object from outside the solar system that has come into our solar system. You, Professor, have discovered something about this object. You call it a meteor or a comet or neither?
No. Well, a meteor is an object that collides with Earth, and this one did not really collide with Earth. It was passing through the inner solar system. It was very bright and roughly the size of a city, about 2 kilometers in diameter. What was unusual about it is that it arrived within 5 degrees of the plane of the planets around the sun. And that's a chance of 1 in 500. Nevertheless, it came as if it was targeting the inner solar system. And there were questions about the various anomalies. I listed 22 of them, very unusual facts about this object, either some geometric features that it exhibited or a composition that it had, which was very unusual. Like it had the nickel without iron, and the only other place where we see that is in industrially produced nickel alloys. There were jets, for example, 3 jets coming from its nucleus that were symmetrically separated on the sky. So a number of questions that we don't have answers to. I decided to define a classification scale for interstellar objects like 3I Atlas, where 0 implies that it's a natural object like a comet or an asteroid, a rock or an iceberg. And 10 means that it could be alien technology, a probe that was sent from another civilization, which, of course, would mean that we might not be at the top of the food chain within the Milky Way galaxy. That's a possibility that we should contemplate. And the best way to find out is to see if there is any probe heading our way, similar to the Voyager spacecraft that we launched that are making their way right now out of the solar system.
Professor Loeb, it's important for me to emphasize at this point that you're not a Scientific America writer. You're not a popular mechanics writer. You're not a late night talk show host. You're a Harvard professor, and you find anomalies about this object from outside of our solar system that makes you go, this is amazing. This is really, and you've come up with a classification scale that suggests that maybe this is made by an intelligent civilization and sent toward us. Now, recently, this week, you revealed to the scientific community something else about this object, about atomic radioactive water that you believe is on it.
Yeah, so there was a detection of deuterium, which is an isotope of hydrogen. And in the universe, the abundance of deuterium is one part in 40,000 relative to hydrogen. But on this object, 3I Atlas, the abundance was a few percent, one part in 30. So it's an enhancement by a factor of 1,000 relative to the cosmic abundance. And the question is why? And we all know that deuterium is a very useful fuel for fusion. And the question is whether there is anything technological on this object. I'm not saying there is. I mean, it most likely is an iceberg that happens to have unusual composition and unusual characteristics in terms of its arrival to the solar system, the fact that it came close to Mars and Jupiter and all kinds of other anomalies. But we have to be aware of the possibility of a black swan event, meaning something we don't suspect that happens to have a big impact on humanity. And that's a rare situation when you do scientific research. Most of the time, as an astronomer, I study objects that are very far away that have no impact on our daily lives. But This is one such example where we do have to pay attention. And there was a previous object called Oumuamua discovered in 2017, which was also very peculiar. The amount of light from the sun that was reflected from it changed by a factor of 10 as it was tumbling every 8 hours. It meant that it has a very extreme shape, most likely flat, and it was pushed away from the sun by some mysterious force without shedding any gas or dust that we could see. And so the question is, what's propelling it? And
well, Professor Loeb, Harvard professor, what do you think is propelling that?
I suggested that it may be just the sunlight pushing it. And in fact, 3 years after Oumuamua was discovered, the same telescope in Hawaii that discovered it found another object pushed by reflecting sunlight. And that one happened to be a rocket booster that was launched by NASA in 1966. And we understood that it must be that because it was made of stainless steel and it was following the path of that rocket booster. And we know that it's technological because we produced it. The question is, who produced Oumuamua? And that remains an open question. And all I'm saying is that comet experts that are used to identifying rocks in the sky or icebergs in the sky, they should expand their training data sets to include also technological objects because we know that we polluted space with our objects. And so another civilization might have done that long ago, billions of years ago.
Right. Now, Professor Loeb, this object that has radioactive fluid on it, that you believe is radioactive fluid on it, if it hit Earth, would it be like the radiation of an atomic bomb? Would it be dangerous if we touched it? Would the person become poisoned? What's your opinion?
Well, in fact, there was cyanide that in the plume of gas around the 3I Atlas that was detected. That's quite poisonous. But it was in the form of gas. And we just don't know whether 3I Atlas released fragments that could hit the Earth. In fact, there was a report this week that the number of meteor fireballs in our atmosphere had a dramatic surge in recent months. And that's the time when the Earth passed closest to the path of 3I Atlas. And so an interesting question is whether we are seeing some fragments of rocks. These are small, a few inches in size, that belong to 3I Atlas that are colliding with Earth right now. That remains to be seen. It's not clear. But all in all, there is no risk to Earth that was posed by 3I Atlas. And it was just a very peculiar object. And there is an observatory in Chile called the Rubin Observatory that is using a 3.2 gigapixel camera to monitor the sky, the southern sky. And it's expected to discover dozens of objects like 3I Atlas or Oumuamua in the coming decades. So, you know, as always in science, we should not assume anything, just observe and figure out because nature could surprise us. And there is, of course, also the data that the U.S. government may have collected over the decades, and that's data that is classified within
but
the
it
Pentagon.
Shouldn't,
within.
It shouldn't be classified to you. You're an incredibly credible gentleman, an expert, a Harvard professor. They should be sharing it with you to help decide what it is, to help classify it, to help it make sense that you'd be brilliant at. Your colleagues in academia, your colleagues, do they respect you? Do they embrace your theories? Or is there always some trouble in the cafeteria?
No. I mean, I gave 2 weeks ago a colloquium at Harvard about my research, and it was very well received. And people who know me realize that I'm driven by my curiosity. And, you know, I am not trying to get as many likes as possible. I don't care about it. In fact, you know, what drives me is to understand our cosmic neighborhood and whether we have a neighbor. You know, we know of billions of Earth-Sun analogs, most of which were born billions of years before the solar system. And so we it's quite possible that we have a sibling in our family of intelligent civilizations out there. And it's also possible that the U.S. government collected already some data indicating that. There was some discussion about that by former President Obama and later President Trump, who directed the Pentagon to release classified information about extraterrestrial life and intelligence. And I very much look forward to any such information. I'll be delighted to help government figure out if they have objects they don't fully understand, because at the very least, it's a matter of national security. If these objects are human-made, we should understand them. And if they're not human-made, they could be, represent the biggest discovery ever made.
The biggest discovery.
The future of humanity.
You're right. The biggest discovery ever made. Avi Loeb, professor, Harvard University, revealing the secrets of the universe for you. Another Side of Midnight, Walter Sterling. 800-848-9222. Professor Loeb, 800-848-9222. I have presented to you a cornucopia of popular topics tonight that it's time for you to share your opinion and your feelings about. They include this stuff coming toward Earth that's covered by radioactive waste that the professor says if it came toward Earth, it's like an atomic bomb. You and I have talked with Meredith and Megan, Meredith, my kid, about the impact of this insanely stupid court case this week that blamed Facebook and Instagram for corrupting a teenage girl and gave the responsibility for that teenage girl to an algorithm. Sorry, that's a parent's responsibility. How the hell could that happen? And then Gord McNeil, he's the head of the Truckers Association, and he says truckers are the victims of conspiracy, a vicious conspiracy to put them out of business. My phone number is 800-848-9222. Ed Babylon, welcome to Another Side of Midnight. How many sides are there?
In Babylon?
What? Yes, how many sides to Babylon are there? Because I've been to Babylon, Long Island, and that was one visit too many, yeah.
Well, there's North Babylon, West Babylon, there's Babylon proper, the Village of Babylon.
Listen, don't try to make yourself into the Great Gatsby. There aren't that many sides of your town that anybody would care about, Ed.
Nor am I a geographer. Walter, I wanted to see you mentioned in the beginning about Ma Bell and the building without windows. My uncle Jerry Meade was in the Office of Secret Service, and after the war, he was offered a job in Washington on the startup of the CIA, and he didn't take that. So ultimately, they offered him a job with Ma Bell. Are they connected, all of them?
Well, the reason I discussed, Ed, thank you for the call. The reason I discussed what I discussed was before the Bell system was broken up, all of the local phone company buildings, all of them, whatever they were called, Bell Telephone, Southern Bell, Pacific Bell, that's what they were originally called. All of those buildings had no signage on the outside, none of them, and they had blackout windows. There was no sign in any city that said this is the phone company building. None. And blackout windows, just microwave antennas on the roof. That's the only way you knew those were the phone company. That was it. 20 past the hour with Walter M. Sterling, yet another Side of Midnight on the Red Apple Audio Networks.
All night long, this is Another Side of Midnight with Walter Sterling. It's Another Side of Midnight with Walter Sterling. Now, to the Bernard McGurk Studios, here's Walter Sterling.
Red Apple Audio Networks, good evening. 800-848-9222, 800-848-9222. There are many things that you and I need to discuss. Among them is the fact that this week there was a court case with big money behind it, Facebook, Instagram, Meta, the big Meta company, they lost a court case they should have never lost. The court case was that they were responsible for the algorithm that addicted kids to their sites. Addicted kids to their sites, made them come back over and over again. And I'm like, no, the kids were not made to come back by Meta. They were allowed to get on Facebook and Instagram and other sites by parents. Parents. I don't like the fact that a court has said that this algorithm company can supersede my responsibility as a parent. It's my job to keep that kid off of those computers. It's my job to monitor the software that that kid is consuming. That's my job. And you can whine all you want about how school boards are taking away your autonomy and school boards are going to allow your children to have their sex changed before lunch and all of that nonsense. This is a real deal. This is a situation where the court has said you, as a parent, are not responsible. You're not responsible for what your kid does online. That's what that court case says. That's what it says. 800-848-9222, 800-848-9222. During COVID was the time of massive conspiracies, an incredible number of conspiracies. The government, the pharmaceutical companies, doctors, diplomats, and that Fauci clown. Why isn't he in jail? Why isn't that Fauci in jail? I had a horrendous, just a horrendous response to the COVID vaccine. I was knocked out for 3 days straight and given all of the symptoms of Parkinson's. I had every symptom of Parkinson's to the point where neurologists said, gee, yeah, you have Parkinson's. I want to know about this. I want to know how we became such suckers for this nonsense. And I have a great author on the phone now. Let's talk to him. All right, Walter Sterling, tonight, you and I now know a little tiny bit about the pandemic that we just went through. And I say, right. I say not in 100 years, but 200 years. That's how long it's going to be before the entire truth about that pandemic comes out. 200 years. Because it's layer upon layer upon layer of conspirators that kept the truth from us. It's politicians, crooked politicians, oxymoron. It's the big pharmaceutical companies, enormous investments in money, quote, scientists who want to maintain their credibility until they die. It's going to take all the people involved to die before we get a flirt of the truth of what the hell happened. How did we get suckered into this? Oh, my gosh. And I don't know about you, my friend, but those vaccines made me unbelievably sick, and I will share with you the extent of how sick those vaccines made me coming up. But first, you and I are going to talk to the author of Pandemic of Lunacy. Pandemic of Lunacy. This is Jay Bujewski. Was I close?
Pretty close. Bujewski.
Bujewski. Jay Bujewski. Welcome. Author of Pandemic of Lunacy. What led you to the conclusion that pandemic was the result of lunacy or resulted in lunacy?
One of the lunacies is that scientists and experts are neutral authorities. And another one that's related to the crazy response of the government to that pandemic, which is that the purpose of government is to take care of all our needs and do everything for us. But the pandemic that I'm talking about is the pandemic of crazy ideas, like the two that I just mentioned. There are, you know, I'll talk to audiences, and they say, what's going wrong with us? And how did we get here? Why are we all going crazy? And they don't have to go into the details of tampon dispensers and boys' bathrooms. Everybody knows what they're talking about. That's why I call that the pandemic of lunacy. It's not transmitted by viruses making our bodies sick. It's transmitted mind to mind by loony ideas.
Share with us some of the loony ideas that particularly irritate you and particularly demonstrate your point of view.
Sure. There are 30 of them I talk about in the book. I'm not going to list all 30. Don't worry.
Pick three.
Sure. Basic right and wrong are different for everyone. You know, my students will say, well, you know, maybe what the Nazis did was wrong for them, but, you know, it was right for them, but it might be wrong for us. Marriage can be whatever we want it to be. You know, kids, no kids, two people, three people, five people of assorted sexes coming and going as they please. Or how about this one? Human nature is merely animal. We are animals, but we're animals with a difference, and people forget that difference. Or the you said three, I'll give you four. The truth about God doesn't matter. You know, there are people who say, I'm not a believer, I'm not an unbeliever, I just don't think it matters, and I think that that's lunatic.
Now, all of these different points of view and all of the lunacy that you believe exists when people say stuff like this.
Yeah.
How does it harm?
Well, take some of the gender lunacies going on right now. It doesn't just cause harm in relationships. It causes physical harm. We're mutilating children. We're surgically messing with their bodies in ways that are pretty nearly irreversible and that are going to cause damage for the rest of their lives, even if they do try to get a reversal. Or take the lunacies that marriage can be whatever we want to be. People wind up on the rocks. They make their lives miserable. I call that harm, even though it's not harm to people's bodies. It is it's dreadfully harmful.
The pandemic that we just went through, what were some of the lunacy points of view that resulted from the pandemic? What were some of the things we were taught that was crazy talk?
One of the craziest things, and I talk about this is my lunacy number nine, is scientists, scholars, and experts are neutral authorities. Look, Walter, I believe it's possible to be objective. But being objective doesn't mean you don't have a bias. What it means is that you're going to be open to the other party's arguments. You're going to listen to them. You're going to listen to the reasons the other guy gives. You're going to give reasons for your own views. You're not going to try to shut people up and say, I represent science or I know what I'm talking about and you don't. Now, that we didn't see that during the pandemic, did we? Anthony Fauci said, when you challenge me, you're challenging science because I represent science. And then later on, before the Select Committee of the House of Representatives, he admitted that a lot of the distancing guidelines and so forth hadn't emerged from science. They had, as he put it, just sort of appeared. Now, we need scholars and experts and scientists. Of course we do. But they aren't neutral. The best that we can hope, it isn't that they don't have any biases or any points of view or that they can't fall into groupthink. But we want them not to be neutral, but to be, and to not be godlike, but to be as objective as they can.
What harm came from Dr. Fauci's nonsense? Was there specific harm, or was he just very annoying?
Well, he was annoying, but I think that there was specific harm. A number of a very large number, hundreds of thousands of epidemiologists and other health professionals and medical professionals signed what was called the Great Barrington Declaration. They said the government's approach to limiting the spread of the disease is not good. It's taking a hammer to this, and we need to have a more focused approach. It was called focused protection. So that, for instance, we keep the schools open. The children do not seem to contract this disease very easily. So we don't have to hurt them by keeping them out of school for a year and a half. But we will protect the elderly and those with health conditions very, very seriously because they're much more vulnerable. This is called focused protection. You see, you don't have infinite resources. You've got to put most of your protection on the people who need it most. Now, as we know, the governors of one of our great states, and you know which one of us it is, did just the opposite of that and sent the COVID patients into nursing homes, into the places where people were most vulnerable. So yes, this mistake did a lot of damage.
How do these lunatic ideas perpetuate and grow and don't get stopped? What are the factors that will take a lunacy idea and grow it so fast that it can't be stopped? Are there common factors of these myths, these conspiracies that perpetuate themselves?
Well, I think that one reason is something that I like to call motivated irrationality. sometimes we can be crazy, but we've got a reason to be crazy, because if we were thinking clearly, we would be forced to change our minds. We don't want to change our minds. Probably every one of us has had the experience of having, mistreated somebody, done something wrong, you know it was wrong, but you don't want to change your mind, do you? You don't want to repent. You don't want to make up with the other person. You'd rather try to convince yourself that you did the right thing and that other person was all in the wrong. And in order to do that, you may twist your mind into pretzels and even accept bad arguments and ignore the good arguments. That kind of thing, you could call it a sort of a revenge of conscience. That sort of thing is going to drive you into further wrongdoing. Let's say that I've been terrible to you. I shouted at you. I hit you. I accused you of all kinds of things you didn't do. And I was wrong, but I don't want to admit it. In order to placate my conscience, in order to make myself feel better without actually repenting, I might try to convince myself that you deserved it. And if you really did deserve it, if I convince myself of that, then I've got a motive to treat you even worse. All right? Or take the loony idea that marriage can be whatever we want it to be. Well, if you believe that, it provides you with convenient excuses for your unfaithfulness, your misbehavior, all of your other things. Human nature is merely animal. It gives us a perfect excuse for giving in to our baser impulses. We can transcend human nature. That's a loony idea, but it's very popular now among some of the tech moguls. They think, we're going to be plugging chips into our brains and turning ourselves into gods. Well, the temptation to be gods, that's been around for centuries. That's nothing new. This is just a new form of it. But we have motives to believe that particular loony idea because we like the idea that we're not going to let God to be God. We're going to make ourselves God. So you see, in each of these cases, there's maybe some grain of truth. For example, basic right and wrong are different for everybody. Well, some details maybe, but not the basics. And you take that little grain of truth and you run with it, and you get the idea that the Holocaust might have been wrong for us, but right for the Nazis. You have to. So that can help these ideas to spread too. It's that grain of truth that's taken out of context and exaggerated.
Pandemic of Lunacy is the name of this brilliant book that isolates through our culture, through our conversations, from the workplace to the schools, myths that are perpetuated to the point of conspiracy level that this just has to be the way it is. I have three kids in public schools. I confront their lunacy on an hourly basis, the schools. And the greatest harm done to public schools are the teachers, because the teachers are often good to excellent. And they set the bar pretty high, because then they're surrounded by administrators who are by and large useless, principals and administration, a board of education, all of which have a much lower bar. And that is progressive. When you look at the schools and when you look at most people's workplaces, some of the conspiracies, some of the workplace lunacy, some of the in-school lunacy that you may have seen.
Yes, I do see that. I see that in the public schools. I see that not just in the public elementary schools and public high schools, but I see that going all the way up into the universities, like the one where I work. The education is being replaced by indoctrination, and often it's indoctrination even in these lunacies.
All right, now listen. I need to interrupt you there. I've heard this. I've heard what you just said a million times. Can you give me an example of it? Can you give me an example of how indoctrination is taking place at our great universities? I'm an adjunct professor. Nobody came to me and said, be sure to push this.
No, nobody does. One doesn't have to, because one's motivated to do it already. A student came to me once and told me about a course that he was taking. He was taking a course of mine on philosophy. He said, I'm so excited to study philosophy. I'm from so-and-so, your colleague. I'm learning how to construct my own reality, how to invent my own reality. Uh-huh. And I said, he's teaching you that you can invent your own reality? He said, yeah. So you're in a different reality than I'm in? Yeah. One of my students, this was another student, was being pushed in one of his classes. And a student in the class was pushing back against the professor and said, and because the idea was, well, you can be born this, you can be born that way. And so the student said, so So you're saying if I say I'm a refrigerator, then I'm a refrigerator. And another student took the professor's side and said, it wouldn't be like that. You would have been born a refrigerator.
And this is what your colleagues do at the fancy. This is what your colleagues do at the fancy thing. Yeah, this is
what a lot of them. Now that there are some sane ones, but the problem is, you mentioned the administrators, and that's where the greatest problems are. I agree, but the problem is that the sane ones are afraid because it's the insane ones who have the institutional power, and so the sane ones stay in the closet. And don't challenge this. They try to be good teachers, but you know, you need to be more than just being a good teacher. If lunacy is all around you, you have to push back. You have to do not only some teaching, but some unteaching. And sometimes you have to be pretty aggressive about that.
Are you aggressive about that at your school?
I am pretty aggressive. I try to be aggressive, and I don't want to intimidate my students. They're getting enough intimidation from some other people, but I will be aggressive in the sense that I'm frank. I'll tell them, look, you don't have to agree with me. My only rule is if you disagree with me, I want you to give your reasons instead of just calling me names, or if you disagree with each other, that's okay too, but don't call each other names. Give your reasons. And I want to teach well enough so that if I'm desperately wrong, you have a fighting chance of finding out. And then I'll go ahead and not pretend to be neutral, but I'll say, for instance, you know, men and women are complementary to each other. They balance each other. This is in my course on natural law. They balance each other. They need each other. A man is sort of incomplete in some ways that a woman isn't. And a woman is kind of incomplete in some ways that a man isn't. This is good. I said in class not too long ago when I was trying to explain this idea, you know, the husband and the wife need each other and the kid needs a mom and a dad. And a young woman in the class got very upset and made a complaint to my dean that by saying a kid needs a mom and a dad, I was establishing a discriminatory atmosphere in the classroom.
Well, clearly you were. I mean, how dare you say anything as radical as that?
Yeah, well, I was discriminating between what seems to be the truth about childhood and the need for parents and what seems to be a lie. That's true enough. That was a discrimination. I was just going to say there's discrimination in discrimination. I discriminated against five-year-olds when I say they can't drive.
Pandemic of lunacy. How do we bust out of the culture of a pandemic of lunacy? How do we bust out of it?
Well, the first thing I think we want to do is we've been made ashamed of our common sense. Now, it's true that common sense is sometimes wrong. Most of the time, though, it's orbiting around the truth. It's pretty close, and what you need to do is not throw it out and accept some loony theory that is disconnected from reality, but you need to just clean up common sense a little bit and elevate it, ennoble it. So don't be ashamed of common sense. We also have to look at ourselves very honestly, because sometimes we let some of these loony ideas pass in society or in government or in our public schools because we are guilty of some looniness ourselves. For example, I might say, well, I'm a moderate, and oftentimes what I mean is that I'm only moderately lunatic. Or I might say I'm a conservative, and what I mean is I don't want to take any new lunacies on board, but I want to conserve the lunacies that I've already bought into. I think we need to look at ourselves before we point fingers at other people and try to clean up some of the sloppy thinking and lunatic thinking in our own lives. And that can be hard. But I think that the most important thing is to be hopeful about this and not to fall into despair, not to think there is nothing that can be done, and to not be afraid to speak.
Pandemic of Lunacy. I urge you to get this book. It will confirm many of your suspicions, and that's always a good book. Walter Sterling, The Other Side of Midnight on the Red Apple Audio Networks. Representative Tim Burchett, Kentucky. Isn't he a Kentucky guy? He revealed that UFO scientists were found dead after testifying in Congress about UFOs. Now, tomorrow, we're going to have an update from Ross Coulthart about the major general who left his house about 2 weeks ago, who knew everything about UFOs relative to the U.S. military. And he disappeared. He left his house 2 weeks ago and he disappeared. Did he take his cell phone? No. Did he take his watch? No. But he took his service revolver. That's what he took with him. And this was a stable guy. This wasn't a scary guy. This was no nut job. He was working. He had a job. He was 65, in great shape. He was a very successful military man, a major general. And he disappeared. We're going to get an update from Ross Coulthard about this. And next week, you and I will talk to Congressman Tim Burchett. We'll talk to Congressman Tim Burchett next week and get an update from him on what he views as a major conspiracy. He says there have been a number of whistleblowers who have disappeared. And I want to know about that. And now I want to talk to you. My number is 800-848-9222. 800-848-9222. And you know who I hear? I hear the great Mr. Novak.
This is Another Side of Midnight with Walter Sterling. It's Another Side of Midnight with Walter Sterling. Now, to the Bernard McGurk Studios, here's Walter Sterling.
All right, good evening. Walter Sterling, very excited to be talking with you. It's just us now, isn't it? All the clowns you live with have gone to bed. You're at work. I promise you're at work alone. It's okay, in the 18-wheeler, sweeping up in the high school, work in the lobby of that office building by yourself. It's okay. I'm here by myself, 14 inches away from the mic. You're 14 inches away from the speaker. This is the most intimate medium there is. Mr. Advertiser, listen to Walter Sterling. John Catsimatidis has created an incredible radio environment. One of the tragedies of American radio today is most radio stations are run and operated by people who, one, know nothing about radio, but two, have no belief in the future of radio. If you're on the air on any format in any radio station in America, you must believe in the future of radio or you couldn't go to work. But if you're in the sales department, here's the problem. If you're in the sales department, what is your job? Your job all day is to listen to media buyers telling you why your product isn't any good. And what are they doing? They're negotiating the price down. They're doing their job, but it can eat them. Salespeople come back and they're downtrodden about the future of radio, but people on the radio must believe in the future of radio or they wouldn't go to work. That's how it goes. John Catsimatidis bought and started the Red Apple Radio Networks and bought up a number of terrific affiliates like WABC in New York. And he believes in radio. This is the only radio company I know of that adds employees on a regular basis, that takes more square footage in the building than trying to dump square footage like all the other radio companies are. Now, why is this? Well, because John, who's a businessman, a brilliant businessman, a common sense businessman, he's looking at the numbers, and his numbers keep getting better and better and better, and he keeps investing and investing and investing because he's a great businessman. Any advertiser on this radio station is going to see the results they want. I was raised in a retail family. My dad bought radio advertising. And you know what he bought? He bought what he liked. He didn't get near ad agencies. He didn't like media buyers. He thought that was nonsense. What did he do? He bought radio time that he liked, which kept people at the door and feet on the floor of his retail businesses. And that's what you will find. You're running a business. Red Apple Audio Networks, Monday morning, that's your project. Alexi in Queens, welcome to 800-848-9222. Alexi in Queens at 800-848-9222. Welcome to yet another side of midnight.
Good morning, Mr. Sterling.
Yes, excited to speak to you, Alexi.
Yeah, I am a refugee from Eastern Europe for some 35 years.
I would have never known. Alexi, I would have never known that.
Well, anyway.
Yes.
The point is this, that during COVID, when yes. COVID was declared, I absolutely refused to take the shot. Absolutely refused, vehement, very vehement. And the woman I was living with, she was older than I was.
That's impossible.
Whatever. She was old, yeah, and she didn't want the shot either. So we walked around, no mask, no nothing, doing our everyday in and out. Never got COVID, never, nothing, not even a cough. Everyone around us, we live in a very densely populated area of New York. Everybody coughing, shaking, troubled, sick. Some people have to go to hospital. Incredible. And I found out she had the cancer, the end-of-life cancer, you know, the... What is his word? I mean, it's a terminal one. She went to a hospital, and you know these bastards, these criminals, they would not let me into the hospital before she died to see her.
Scum.
Because they say, you don't have the shot.
I can't tell you, Alexei, how sorry I am to hear that. That's a tragedy. You had a double tragedy. You lost the woman you lived with, and I assume loved, and she lost the companionship of a man who loved her. Alexei,
yes.
This is what happens when mindless, stupid bureaucrats bond with late-night talk show hosts to convince you to do something. It's a tragedy, Alexei, and I feel very sad for you. Today, a little few years later, is your life gotten any better, or is this just a lake of sadness?
I can see this. And so far, it's not good. It's very, very unhealthy because we were very close for many, many years. And she and I, she was a very special older woman, very brilliant, very well-educated.
Well, of course, Alexei. Of course she was. Now, listen, thank you very much for your call. I hope you sue everybody, Alexei. It's horrible what was done. Thank you for your call. 800-848-9222, 800-848-9222. I can't believe, looking back, and I'm sure you can't either, I cannot look back and look at what we all bought into, the garbage we bought into from building forts outside restaurants so that we could all sit outside in the freezing cold and be protected from what exactly? And wearing those stupid masks and then seeing video after video of the official types right before they were going to give speeches. And they were all standing around the podium with no masks on. And then the cameras are about to go on and they all quickly put on their masks. This was a big con. And when you have major pharmaceutical companies telling us that we all must do something and that these are all free. These injections are free. They're covered by your insurance. What a scam. They all had the money coming in. They knew where the money was coming in. They knew how much money was coming in. And the entire world bought into this pretty much. I got very sick from the vaccine, and I am still sick from the vaccine. And here's why. I took the vaccine. I was knocked out for 3 days. Didn't know where I was. Didn't know what I was doing. Came to, had every symptom there was of Parkinson's. I had Parkinson's. I don't have Parkinson's. I had a terrible misdiagnosis. It triggered Parkinsonism, which is Parkinson's symptoms, but not the disease. You have all the symptoms, but you don't have the disease. It's called Parkinsonism. That's what I had, and it was triggered because I was on a medication where one of the side effects could have been Parkinsonism, and I had been on it for a long time. It didn't have those side effects. The vaccines triggered it. It was a horrendous experience. But to this day, I have long-term COVID. What's that? Things taste funny, really funny. And I smell things, like I'll be sitting where there's no such car, there's no car nearby. I smell car exhaust. Where's the car exhaust coming from? It's all long-term COVID. I could go on and bore you forever. But the point is, this was a con. This was a long con, a long con. 800-848-9222. Pamela in Jersey, welcome to the Red Apple Audio Networks and yet another side of Midnight.
I like that author, The Pandemic. He was really great. When I was in high school, I had an older female history teacher, and she would always talk about dining with Nazis in Argentina. And I'm thinking, oh, well, and she would push the ideas of Nazism. And I'm thinking, all right, A, she's either delusional, or B, she's really, you know, trying to con us and push us into ideas of this. And, you know, so A and B both. So I sort of naively, but I was taught to speak up and challenge in my household. So I very nicely kind of challenged her. And so what was my reward for that? I got called to the counselor's office with a complaint that I was having trouble in the class. But it was, thank God, I had a wonderful counselor. Oh my God, that counselor in high school, she was wonderful. And she understood it totally. And, you know, the sad fact that there was a teacher like that. And I learned a very important lesson. It taught me well that sometimes the classroom can be a scary place, or any kind of institution can be a scary place when they try to sway you and indoctrinate you.
What'd your parents say?
My parents were proud of me that I spoke up. We were big on history in my home and the truth.
Well, I'm proud of you for speaking up, too. That's incredible, but it's not unusual. Teachers, they have a lesson plan. They have instructions. They have teacher colleges. They have principals. But 90% of their day, they are unsupervised, completely unsupervised. They can teach you whatever enters their mind, and they can screw you up in many ways. My best friend in elementary school was named Charles Weissman. I will never forget, and thank you for the call, Pamela, I will never forget where we're learning Christmas carols. And there's Charles Weissman, who was the straight-A student, smartest kid in the school, and we're learning Christmas carols. And Miss Fitzgerald, our third-grade teacher, was not happy with how Charles was learning the Christmas carols. He was not learning them fast enough. And the teacher says, "What's the matter, Charles? Don't you know Christmas carols? Don't you know Christmas carols?" To Charles Weissman, Ruth and Frank Weissman's son. And if that happened today, of course, the Weissman family would be very, very wealthy. But imagine that. And that's what teachers get away with. They can have those little moments with students that can screw them up for the rest of their lives. The sweet irony of the situation with Charles Weissman is that dynamic, that situation, that screwed me up. He doesn't remember it. He has no memory of this. I'm Walter M. Sterling. I got a phone number for you, and I want to talk with you at 800-848-9222, 800-848-9222. Look at all of the things that you and I have to discuss. We have to discuss the meteor coming at us that's radioactive. We have to discuss the scam and the conspiracy against truckers and much more. The Other Side of Midnight, Red Apple Audio Networks.
Is Another Side of Midnight with Walter Sterling. Now, to the Bernard McGurk Studios, here's Walter Sterling.
855-800-848-9222, 800-848-9222, Walter Sterling. This is live radio at 6 minutes past the hour, 6 minutes past the hour. I was sharing with you about John Katsimatidis, who owns the radio station, with his beautiful wife, Margot. Margot, who has such good taste, I think I'm largely here because Margot goes, I liked him. He was good. I think that has a lot to do with it, and I thank you for that, Margot. But John is a common sense billionaire. It's all practical, common sense, down the line, makes sense. Everything he says makes sense. Like it, dislike it, doesn't matter. It makes sense. I'm in the New York City subway today, and I got one of the greatest moments of being on the radio that I've ever had in my career, and I thank you, John. I'm on the subway, the 2 train, just so everybody knows, I'm on a real subway train, not the 4, 5, 6, one of those sissy trains, a real train, the 2 train. Buddy, you got it, the 2 train. It goes from down there to way up there, and you make one mistake, and you're in a dangerous place, and another train won't come for days. But I knew when to get off. I knew when to get on New York. I'm reading the New York Post, the real newspaper. I'm going through the New York Post. I had no notice of this. No one had asked me permission. No one had given me a heads up. I'm in the subway car with New Yorkers. I open up the Post, going through it, page 6. Son of a gun, there is a full-page ad for our New York affiliate, WABC, a full-page color ad. And there's my name. And I'm looking around the car, and I'm like, oh, my gosh. And what do I want to do? I'm such a loser. I wanted to get up and show each person on this car, here's my name. Here's the ad for WABC. I was sitting next to a nice lady. And I couldn't help myself. I nudged her and I said, look at this. And she looks at it and she goes, is that you? I said, yeah, it's me. Oh, very nice. I think she wanted to get away as fast as possible. Anna in New York City, welcome to Another Side of Midnight.
Hello, Mr. Sterling. Yes. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure, yes.
Yes, I the other day when the young lady that her mother died was on the phone, I was crying so bad because I was my mother. I was very close to my mother. I love my mother. So when I keep having dreams about the lady, so I said if I could get in touch with her, I'll share the dreams. Maybe something could, I don't know. I really feel for her. She's such a bright lady. Have a good job and her mother grew up.
Now, I'm sorry, Anna. Who are you talking about?
The lady that we can't find. She disappeared.
Oh, Savannah Guthrie's mother. Mother. The NBC Today Show anchor. Her mother disappeared 2 weeks ago, 6 weeks ago in Arizona. And you're very sad about that, Anna. Is that right?
Yes, because she's like my mom's friend.
Was your mother abducted and killed? Was your mother abducted and killed?
No. My mother, no, she's a trooper. She's very bright.
Oh, she's alive.
No, she's dead. She's dead 20 years now.
20 years.
Yeah.
Yeah, mine too.
But we were very close. We were very I go. I would pick her up in my car and take her anywhere, even snow. And she only trusts me to drive her anywhere. Yes. I don't know.
Anna. Anna, listen to me. Clearly, your mother was a great mom. And the reason I know that is in your voice, I hear empathy and I hear heart. When you do what I do, you get to know people's voices really fast. And clearly, you are a sweet woman. And that only comes from mom. That comes from your mom. And that's her legacy. You are her legacy. When you do good things, when you help others, that's your mom. And that means that she's very much alive. She's very much alive in you. And I thank you, Anna. I thank you for your call at 800-848-9222, 800-848-9222. There are so many things that we need to review. Some of the things we need to review is the horrendous, endless tenure of the COVID disease and the COVID vaccine and the conspiracy of silence. And as I said, it's going to be 200 years before everything about that scam is revealed. Not until everybody who made it happen has passed away. That's when we're going to hear about it. And then the amazing horror imposed on America's truckers. Being a trucker is not a job you can fake. It's not like being an executive or an accountant. You can't fake being a good trucker. You fake being a trucker and you're off the side of the road, or you're ticketed so many times that you're not going to get back on the road. You're going to lose your license. There's no wiggle room in being a trucker. And I salute America's truckers. I have tremendous respect for America's truckers. And I see a lot of the crap that they put up with. One of the things that amazes me is you and I, you don't have any idea. We don't have any idea how much truckers pay in tolls. There should be no tolls. It's criminal that there are tolls. I'm often asked, well, you know, if you get rid of the tolls, Walter, well, you know, you want to get rid of the tolls, how are they going to repair the road? The roads are not repaired by the tolls. The roads are repaired by gasoline excise taxes. That's where the road repair money comes from. The tolls pay for bonds that were raised to pour concrete. And then the charters all say the same language. As soon as the bonds are paid off, then the tolls are going to be taken down. Unless, in the opinion of the authority, it is necessary for safety reason to pour more concrete, they can raise bonds until those are paid off. Wow. As long as somebody's pouring concrete, I don't know who that would be. As long as somebody's pouring concrete, they can collect tolls. That's a hell of a system. Then there's a mystery object headed toward Earth. And for months now, it has been a curious sort of comet, meteor. They're not really sure. But then last week, a Harvard professor says, well, you know what's on that? I believe there is radioactive liquid on that. Atlas 13 or something. And we had him on, and he explained that there is radioactive liquid on that. 800-848-9222, 800-848-9222. Danny in Westchester. Are you in a fancy part of Westchester, Danny?
Yes, it's very fancy. And we have some mighty fancy cars up here, too. You know something, Walter, your show leaves us spellbound. You know, when I went to school in the Bronx, we had 600 schools, and it was crazy. I mean, they put them in the neighborhood. All the crazy kids, you know, they put them into 600 schools. Now they just leave the kids in their regular classrooms, and it's insanity for kids who want to learn. And, the teachers are no help, but a lot of them are very leftists, very communist-oriented. And
how do you know that?
They have it in a bookbinder to tell them, but they bring their political views into the classroom. They'll do what the second grade is. It's crazy. It doesn't make any sense.
Give me an example. You're spouting talk show crap. Give me an example. Prove it.
What about all the illegal aliens who are driving commercial trucks, like the guy who did a U-turn on the highway last year in Florida, or the other guy that blew like 4 or 5 stop signs? He couldn't read English, and they're just giving them out like hotcakes. They're looking to destroy the American workers and the American truckers who make a good living. And, you know, it was one of those jobs out of high school. You could get a decent pay, and now they're giving them to illegal aliens. New York State, commercial license with no name on it. What does no name on it mean? Is that an IOU or something? What is that?
Dave, welcome to the Red Apple Audio Networks at 800-848-9222. Dave, are you excited to be here? You're speaking to all of America.
How are you, Mr. Sterling?
Yes, Mr. Dave.
I heard your thing about the tolls. To me, the tolls are like the taxes that you have on your telephone bill, right? That's basically taxation without representation. Just like every 6 months, my insurance carrier, Geico, I'm paying an enforcement fee. Meanwhile, on Long Island, where I'm from, half the time there's no cops on the road giving anybody any summons in the overnight hours. And the lighting on the LIE going towards Nassau and Suffolk County sometimes is non-existent.
Dave, what's an enforcement fee? What is that?
It's a $5 fee they charge every 6 months on your car insurance in New York State.
You're kidding.
That's what they call it.
You're kidding.
I'm dead serious. I can show you my insurance bill from Geico. I says, listen, my record is clean. I haven't had a ticket or an accident. I haven't had a chargeable claim since 2001 or 2002. And I had a rear ender back out in Medford, and since that time I've been clean. And Geico.
You mean you've been off drugs, Dave? You clean? You mean you've been off drugs? Is that what it means?
I never did any drugs.
Thank God. Now, so this is the result of natural selection, the way you're talking.
What do you mean by natural selection?
Well, you have no chemical influences, no alcohol. This is just you?
I don't drink alcohol. The last time I had drink was 1989. I drink generally green tea. I used to be a Pepsi addict.
Why aren't you talking into the phone? If you're going to talk to me, talk into the phone. What are you doing, moving it around? You need to be a better caller.
I used to be a Pepsi addict. I used to drink a whole bottle of Pepsi.
That's right.
Pepsi every day for a whole year.
How's the diabetes?
No, I never got diabetes from that.
So you're not very interesting. You're not an addict. You're not a drunk. You're not a diabetic. Flat-footed?
No.
Accessory navicular?
Nope. And I don't smoke either. I have my first and last cigarette when I was 5. I saw my uncle doing it. I says, can I have one? He says, sure. As well as one small problem. I says, what's that? He says, you're supposed to inhale. And after that was the last one I ever had.
That was a smart uncle. You had no interest after that. Hey, Dave, you're a good call. You're a good guy. Thanks very much for calling. 800-848-9222. 800-848-9222. Walter M. Sterling. Another side of midnight. I have to keep track of all these sides of midnight, sides of beef. And what else am I supposed to say? Oh, yeah, 800-848-9222. Now, coming up, you realize that it's been 100 years since this planet has been polluting the radio spectrum in the universe. For 100 years, this planet has put out radio and television signals into the atmosphere, and they just go. They just continue. And when you used to have a television that was with an antenna, maybe your grandparents had it, with an antenna, between the stations, there were those white lines. There was that static in those white lines. That was your antenna picking up every signal available at that moment to your house, to your roof, coming from everywhere, coming from the beginning of the Big Bang to last week's newscast. It was all coming in static at that moment in time. And you and I will talk to Michael Harrison in just seconds about what that means and what that is about. But first, 800-848-9222. Johnny in Jersey, welcome to the Red Apple Audio Networks with Walter Sterling. Johnny?
Yeah, I'm here.
Welcome. Congratulations for speaking to me.
Am I on the radio?
You're on the air.
Yeah. I'm wondering why these Islamics from Iran, why do they want death to the Americans? And why do they want death to Israel? I don't understand that. Why don't they just live their lives and try to have a productive society?
Because they're jealous of our television. They're jealous of the television shows that we have, like The View and Gutfeld. That's what it is. They're jealous of us. And I thank you for the call, Johnny. Thank you very much at 800-848-9222, 800-848-9222. Walter Sterling, 20 past the hour, Red Apple Audio Networks, Another Side of Midnight.
All night long, this is Another Side of Midnight with Walter Sterling. It's Another Side of Midnight with Walter Sterling. Now, to the Bernard McGurk Studios, here's Walter Sterling.
All right, it's always very exciting to be with you on the biggest all-night show in American radio. This is a live radio show, the rarest of all media, a live radio show with Roberta from Brooklyn. Welcome to Another Side of Midnight.
Thank you. I want to know, what is it about COVID that's a scam?
There was a long list of scams. First of all, where did it originate? Have we settled on where it originated? Has there been an official statement as to where it originated? Because that seems to move every hour.
Well, it's not so much as where it originated. Is do you don't you believe it was a real disease? I agree with you on the vaccines. I hate vaccines, but it was a real disease, wasn't it? People died from it.
People died from it, but there's much vagary about who died from it. Was it just people who had other conditions, other serious health problems? Was it people who only had COVID? And what was the definition of COVID? You met some people who had it with a terrible sore throat. Others died of pneumonia. Others died from it and had no symptoms. Doesn't smell like a real disease to me. It smells like an amalgam of symptoms that they could label, oh, well, that's COVID. And in fact, it was necessary if you worked in a hospital, pretty much you had to label everything as COVID. And also the year of the peak COVID, there was no flu. How were there no flu deaths during the year of COVID? Were they all mislabeled COVID? That's what I think, Roberta. And I thank you very much for calling from Brooklyn. I love Brooklyn. 800-848-9222. 25 past the hour. Michael Harrison is an expert on metaphysics. And one of the questions that Michael is wondering is like, what happens in the universe when for 100 years from our little globe, we have been putting out radio signals that go forever? Couple questions for Michael Harrison. Good evening, Mr. Harrison. Michael Harrison, publisher of Talkers Magazine, a daily publication about the talk radio industry, and it's free. So you are a talk radio geek. You can subscribe to it, learn all of the secret things about the hosts that you don't really like, but that's all we got. And Michael is also a wizard on the subject of metaphysics, and he is a deep thinker. He taught me how to think differently. I'm going to give you a quick example of how Michael taught me to think differently, and it will seem so obvious, but at the time, it was not obvious. But this is how I knew Michael was a special guy. At the time, cable was coming into the marketplace. People were getting off of their antenna, no longer using an antenna, and they were getting cable so they could get 36 channels. And I asked Michael what he thought the future of this was and what this meant to the world. And he said, just right off, he said, imagine if the world started off cabled, that there was cable in everyone's house. And one day a person came along and said, I have invented a way to get rid of the cable. You'll be able to get it wirelessly over the air. I'm like, oh my God, this is a whole different level of thinking. So thank you for being with me tonight, Michael Harrison. Thank you very much.
My pleasure. What you said, your story reminds me of Nikola Tesla. And they think to this day, he had developed a technology that the electric companies tried to stop. And as a matter of fact, it's pretty well accepted as just about fact that Tesla invented a way that you could transmit electricity over the airwaves to charge a battery or to electrify a house, and that you don't need to have electric wires or any of those things, but there'd be no easy way for the electric companies to make a buck out of it. So you talk about the magic of things going through the air. But I always wondered that. I go, why are people going to cable? And this is a long time ago. We're dating ourselves, but you and I had this conversation quite a while ago. There was no internet. You know, why are they going to cable when we already have one of the greatest miracles of human invention? And that is to send signals through the air and have them converted into sound and sight. And it's just crazy. So sometimes we don't always know which way we're going, forward or backward. And often it is influenced by where the money is. And, you know, so that Tesla story popped up. But I don't know. I find, you know, last week we talked about radio mysticism. And I find the whole field of radio, media, how they intermingle with the senses to be quite mystical. The everyday is mystical to me. Do you find it that way?
On a good day. Now, the difference between listening to audio only, I'll be listening to something on YouTube, or I'll be listening to something on the radio in the car, And then I see a visual, a video about the same piece of music, and it completely changes it for me. The experience changes it to me to see a music video, to see what the person looks like. One of the worst things, the dumbest things that I think people in radio do is they get their pictures out there. I think that's a very bad idea. It is never what you think that person looks like. And you have to waste time reconciling the difference between what I thought they look like and what they do look like. And it's always different, really different, sometimes much worse. So let's talk a little bit about the difference between listening to audio only versus visual media.
Yeah, yeah. I have to say, I remember we'd go to sock hops and the local DJ would come by.
Yeah.
And we'd go, oh, no, he's a geek.
Right. Right.
Here's on the air. Hey, guys and gals, you know, and then he meets it and he's a geek. So right there and then the theater of the mind gets destroyed. And there is that old joke, you have a face for radio. That joke is an old hackneyed joke, but it kind of fits into this. But the truth of the matter is that we consume our senses, our touch, our smell, our taste, and in this case, our hearing and our sight in very different ways. And a case could be made that because of the expansion of use of screens on almost every single device that picks up things either through wires or through the air, that we are losing as a species the ability to appreciate audio only. When MTV first came around, there was that song "Video Killed the Radio Star,"
right?
And the music. A case could be made that the invention of the music video, that music is not as good because the record companies stopped signing artists that didn't have a visual appeal to them. When they have to have 200,000 followers on X before they get signed, which further diminishes the quality of musician. But before, when musicians were only maybe one picture you'd have of them on the back of their album cover or something, there was that same mystery with musicians. And the music is not as good. One of the things that we've learned with this rock band that I'm in, Gun Hill Road, is that we could have on YouTube a song with a music video attached to it that we made. And we can also have the song with just a picture of the record album. And the difference in usage is overwhelming. People go for the video over the audio. Real quick, there's a difference in the way your brain processes the sound or the vibrations of light. It's all vibrations. So without going into a neurological dissertation, let's just say it's a very different process when you're listening to something or when you're seeing it with accompanying sound. And it's of concern to those of us in the media because it may affect the future of media in terms of these platforms, which are all being mushed together into one platform. As a result, we're losing the feeling you get from holding a book in your hand and the crispness of a newspaper watching something that does require a video aspect where the music builds in the background and it changes the mood. All of these things are things I think about because they really have impact on how well things go with radio or otherwise. I want to leave you with one other thought about this subject. Do you find that when you're talking to somebody in headphones or on the phone where it's just audio, that you're able to get to a deeper part of their being than you can when you see them on Zoom or if you're talking to them in person? And that goes back to the DJ. When we talk to somebody, especially somebody we become friends with that we've never seen in person, you've had the experience, we all have, or we know somebody through business or whatever, we know them for years, and then when we meet them, it's, this is not the same person I thought I'm talking to. It actually is. You're just talking to a different level of their depth. And when you talk to somebody on the phone, you're talking to a different level of who they are than the distraction. And I'm not putting down the visuals, but it does take away from a certain depth that we're able to get to when we have a conversation with somebody and it's audio only. It's interesting. I'd like your take on why do you think Generation Z is having so much trouble dealing with the telephone, where they dread being on the phone.
Because they don't know how to make a call. And that's not a joke. They know how to do texts. They know how to get video. They know how to pull up apps. But they don't know how to dial a phone. And as humans, when we just don't know how to do something, we tend to minimize its importance. That's the problem. You also know that Generation X is challenged to read an analog clock, that the dumbest thing a host on the radio or TV can do is say, well, at the top of the hour, they have no idea what you're talking about.
Mm-hmm. Or 10 minutes before 6 or
right.
5 after 4.
They have no, you know, no idea.
It's 4:15, it's 4:50, 4:50. In other words, what you're saying is do it digitally.
Well, which has always been true, by the way, thanks to the diary methodology. The fact is that there's another point I forgot. Forgot the other point. Well, anyway, now we're at a 100 light year bubble of signals emanating from and surrounding Mother Earth. We're at a 100 light year bubble of radio and television signals leaving Mother Earth, going into the universe, surrounding us. What does that mean?
That means theoretically, and actually scientifically, but there is a degree of fudging it in terms of different scientists have different numbers. But it's about 120 years, light years, that we have been sending out radio signals into the cosmos. Now, I don't know if it works as well for TV signals, because TV signals go in a straight line to the horizon, and then I think they fall off the earth. So maybe some TV signals, because they do talk about Milton Berle and I Love Lucy being watched 100 light years from here by some aliens who are trying to figure out what we're about. But there is a bubble of signals around the earth that at this point goes out to 100 to 120 light years, because we've been broadcasting for 100 to 120 years, and that the ones that are strong signals to begin with are particularly likely to go on for even further, which means that we're leaving our mark all over the local universe. Now, when you look at the little tiny round bubble that we have done this to, that we've done this thing to ourselves of saying, here we are, aliens, here we are. It's just a teeny little speck compared to the rest of the universe and even the galaxy that has not been touched by the sound of mankind. But the question now is, are we, and you and I talked a little bit about the dark forest theory as to why we haven't run into aliens, because the smart aliens are hiding from each other because some of them are so vicious. It's like being in a dark forest. You don't want to wave your arms and make noise and have a fire and have people come that will kill you. Well, that's one of the troubles that we have with the fact that we don't know where the aliens are. They might be hiding, and maybe we should be hiding too. And we're not. We're sending out all these signals. And as a result, that might be very dangerous. We might attract unwanted company. So maybe it would be smart to go back. Maybe it would be smart to go back to cable and back to wires so that we're not leaking our scent, so to speak, around the universe.
Our microwave scent.
Mm-hmm.
Our microwave scent.
We're stinking up the neighborhood.
We're stinking up the neighborhood. Michael Harrison, publisher of Talkers Magazine, a broadcaster of note, always with the big ideas that make me think. Walter Sterling, Another Side of Midnight. 37 past the hour, 37 past the hour, Another Side of Midnight with Walter Sterling. You and I can stay in touch, by the way. It's walter.sterling at wabcradio.com. walter.sterling at wabcradio.com. Where is that Jake Novak? Where is Jake Novak? This is a prestigious, important news person. I don't know. Does he go by journalist, news person with great opinions and great ideas? And I want to talk to him about his amazing discovery on the Epstein case. He's made a realization on the Epstein case that is worth discussing, worth you and I discussing. Is he coming in? Yeah. He's coming. What? Yeah. And we'll talk to Jake Novak, who is who's on every Saturday and Sunday morning at 5 in the morning. And this is part of the thing that's so amazing about what John Catsimatidis has done in his ownership. I come on the air after a live host, and then I'm here, I'm live, and then I go off the air, and Jake is here, and he's a live newsman. Now, that may seem like normal, and it used to be normal, but it's not normal anymore. It is a real treat to have live host after live host after live host, and special and different. Jake, are you going to come in here today or tomorrow? When are you going to come in? Come in. Have a seat. This is Jake Novak, prestigious newsman. Do you call yourself a news person or a news journalist? What do you call yourself?
I've always bristled at the journalist thing because I don't do a lot of gumshoe stuff. I do a lot of reading, and I talk to a lot of people who do the gumshoe stuff, and I respect them. But I guess I am a journalist. I guess that's a fair assessment.
He's going to grab a chair now. You don't want this chair because it's broken. I'll tell you, this is like a Swiss watch. It's been like this all night. Pick a mic, any mic. It doesn't really matter. But, Jake, you were revealing to me some interesting observations about the Epstein case, that there were some historic touch points that you went, wait a minute, this was all predicted in many other places. What were you referring to?
Well, I love reading historical fiction. I don't read a lot of fiction. I'm not one of those people who thinks, oh, you can't get much from novels. You have to only read nonfiction books. I do predominantly read nonfiction books. But 32, 34, 35 years ago, I read a fantastic book by E.L. Doctorow. For those who don't know, he's the one who wrote Ragtime. He also wrote another great book called Billy Bathgate. I can't vouch for the movie versions of those two books too much. Ragtime wasn't that bad. Billy Bathgate, not a sad interpretation. But he also wrote a book, I believe it was 1994, might have been a little bit later, a little bit earlier, called The Waterworks. And listen to the plot of this book. Spoiler alert, I'm going to give something away, unfortunately. But basically, the plot of the book is that very, very rich people in Manhattan in the 1870s and 1880s are using children, are abusing children, using their organs to sustain their lives, to let them live longer. That's kind of the mystery that's revealed. It's historical fiction, so one of the characters in the book is Teddy Roosevelt. Another character is Jacob Riis, R-I-I-S, who, if you're outside of New York, you may not know who that is. There's a big beach named after him in the Rockaways, my beloved Rockaways. But Jacob Riis, Walter, was famous for a book he wrote at the end of the 19th century called How the Other Half Lives, because there was this belief in New York, which was generally correct at the time, that half of the population was wealthy and the other half was not. So he exposed the poverty of New York, and the great controversy of the book was, as hard-hitting as it was, he left out the child trafficking part. I mean, does this all sound familiar to you?
Yeah.
I mean, it's just incredible how E.L. he predicted this in a fiction book, but it sounds, when you read, and I don't want to spoil too much, when you read the details of the book, which is not a long book, by the way. Doctorow doesn't write long books. He passed away a few years ago. He details a lot of abuse of children that sounds like the headlines of today. It's really eerie. And I only remembered it a couple of weeks ago. And when you were talking about an Epstein issue on your show. So there you go. I mean, you got to read books. Moral of the story.
The thing about the Epstein and children is I always come back to two things. One is kidnapping and trafficking children is the highest risk occupation possible. Therefore, the money must be enormous. What would the money be enormous for? Because so you can sell it to somebody to adopt a child? Well, no. There are many, many ways to adopt a child. You don't need to do horrendous illegal things. So what is it that they need those children for? What is the purpose? And the common thread, conspiratorial purpose, is that they were used for cannibalism, that there was a belief that children who were terrified created an enzyme, a chemical reaction in their blood that created a chemical that when consumed would keep you young for a very long time, make you look younger for a very long time, and remove fear from your life. That's the myth. and that I don't remember the name of the chemical. I don't remember the name of the special blood, but it's a horrendous tale. Then in order to buy that blood, you have to have a lot of money. It's really expensive. Well, that right there takes it to a different level of people who are probably able to keep a secret and are highly motivated to keep the secret because this blood is going to keep them young. It's going to keep them fearless. It's going to make them stronger. Well, that's all really appealing if you're that kind of horrendous human being. The other part that I always come back to about the kids and Epstein is, where the hell were their parents? And, you know, and the crap argument there is, well, their parents must have been alcoholics or drug addicts. Well, okay, then they were responsible for being alcoholics and drug addicts and crappy parents. Just because they're a drug addict or an alcoholic doesn't excuse them from being a parent. The first job is you got to be a parent.
Yeah, I think, you know, you were talking about the physiological myths out there. I actually think it's much simpler than that. I think it's psychological. You know, when you're a billionaire or that or close to a billionaire in America, eventually, what is it that you can't get? You can pretty much get anything. Now, if I were in that position, I'd like to think that the thing I would really try to strive for that my money couldn't buy would be real love, real family, things that money, those kinds of things that money can't buy. But unfortunately, I think the reason why targeting children is the same thing that they taught us in school, at least by the time I was in school, that happens to be true about rape. Rape is not an act of sexual desire. It's an act of violence. I don't think anyone disputes that anymore. And I think right. The same is true about child sex crimes. Despite the fact that Hollywood now, by the way, is trying to depict it as just a sexual perversion, someone who's just really attracted to children. That's not true. I think there's an attraction to something else, which is the protection of children in our human DNA is something that's in our DNA. It's just a normal thing to do. So the idea that you could abuse a child and get away with it is something that even necessarily a billionaire can't do unless they try to do so. And I think it's about power. I think it's about anger at the fact that there are some things that you still can't get even when you're a billionaire or a politician, powerful politician. And I think that's the allure. Just like rape is not about, that woman was really attractively dressed. I'm going to go rape her now. That's not what it is. It's I want to attack that woman, or I want to attack women in general, or just attack somebody. It doesn't have to necessarily be women. So I think that's what's going on, and that's what's so scary. These are people who have been told every rule can be broken except for this one. And so suddenly it becomes like the forbidden fruit, literally from the Garden of Eden. That's what they're going to want to do, whether it makes any sense or not.
Jake Novak, brilliant broadcaster, great news person. What are some of the stories that you're watching this morning, Jake?
Well, we have this split decision here. I'll call it a split decision on the shutdown. We still have this partial government shutdown, but thanks to an executive order that President Trump signed yesterday, these TSA workers who, look, love or hate the TSA, these people deserve to be paid. I don't believe in slavery in America. I hope that we got that resolved in 1865. They're going to get their paychecks as soon as Monday. So some of them might start trickling in back to work. I don't know if it's going to be this weekend. We're still seeing some longer wait times, even at this early hour. It's not even 5 a.m. here in New York. But so I'm going to be looking at that. And, you know, how amazing is it that we're now beginning our fifth week of a major war against a military power that's been arming itself forever in Iran? And it's the second story because we've had this shutdown drama that's been going back and forth. But I will give you, there's a lot of interesting updates in the Iran war just in the last couple hours. So I'll make sure everyone knows about that. And Tish James, who is one of the banes of many New Yorkers' existence, the Attorney General of New York, who's made it clear that her entire raison d'etre, her entire goal in her political life is to attack President Trump. I thought she was supposed to protect New Yorkers legally. I have to give her credit for something. I think she did something this week that actually is good for New York, and I'd like more attorneys general to do the same thing. So that's my big tease. She did something good, folks. Once in a while, twice a day, a broken clock is correct. So maybe she did something right. I'm going to let you decide when I give you the story.
I think the resolution to the Epstein story is going to be, as more and more stuff gets revealed, the story gets smaller because there are fewer and fewer facts. There's more innuendo. We're looking at 3 million pages. I can't imagine how busy this guy was. if you and I, if our life ended today and they went back and got all of the pages we wrote, we wouldn't be getting near 3 million pages. And also so many people, so many red herring names, just somebody who left a phone message, somebody he left a phone message, hundreds of names of just daily life were in there, and they did nothing. You know, they were guilty of nothing. But the parents, hi, I'm going to go away for a couple weeks to an island in the Caribbean, Mom. I'll let you know where. I'll get back to you. I'm like, whoa. My three daughters, they can't go down the street unless I know whose house are you going to exactly. Oh, and by the way, that house, you cannot go in that house. You want to hang around their yard? That's fine. But do not go in that house. Just instinct, you know, parent stuff, teaching the kids instincts. I can't even imagine how those kids were allowed to go anywhere. And then now that we learn more and more, we learn about neighbors, we learn about people who live near the island, who watched the island, who saw the boats go in and out. They knew it was crazy and said nothing. They all of these people said nothing.
It's possible this had a lot to do with trying to be next to celebrities. I mean, we know there were a lot of big names, and it's possible some parents thought, oh, this will be good for my daughter. They'll be with some top celebrities and some top politicians. Maybe this, I mean, it's all possible. This is all similar. It reminds me of stage parents, Walter.
Yeah.
The people, and you know, I got to say, there's a special place in hell for stage parents. Read the books about it. My former colleague, we worked at Fox Business together, Melissa Francis, has a fantastic book about her stage mom. She and her sister were both thrust into show business as children. It ended very tragically for her sister. Melissa got herself out of it at a good enough time for her. This reminds me of stage parents. I have a good friend who's a very successful screenwriter in Hollywood, 20 years older than I am, but still successfully writing stuff. And he shared a bungalow in one of those Hollywood studio lots with someone who was working for the studio, another writer, and they were giving the parents of some of the child actors a tour that day of the lot. And the guy started to verbally accost those parents because he had been a child of a stage parent as well. And he was just acting out. So I think that that's part of the thing going on here. I don't think that they were not caring or not paying attention. I think they were looking at to their children as a way to advance themselves, perhaps. Don't forget that. These people might have wanted to rub elbows with some of those powerful people, too.
There was an interview with a stage parent who had let their 13-year-old son spend the night at Michael Jackson's. Yes. And somebody asked him a really good question. Really, you let your son spend a night at Michael Jackson's, a couple nights at Mike? Let me ask you, what other 40-year-old black man would you have allowed your son to sleep with? Exactly how would that have worked out? And there it is. That's the stage parent. That is the stage parent challenge. It's terrifying. But I was, I think knowing the people involved and knowing some of the people, like Leon Black. Leon Black was the second big money to Epstein. The first big money was the guy who owned and ran the Limited.
Right.
That was the first big money, who amazingly has not been subpoenaed. He's hadn't been dragged in front of Congress. Nobody's asked him any questions. He started it. It was clearly his starting. And then it was Leon Black. And Leon Black apparently contributed $500 million to Mr. Epstein. Now, I know Leon Black, and I know Leon Black was a scary, smart guy. And I'm like, what? Why would Leon? And Leon's excuse was like, he helped me with taxes. Really? You're Leon Black? You could have the greatest tax lawyers in history. The biggest mistake that I believe every news organization is making about Epstein is they keep calling him financier.
What a joke.
He had an MBA from Wharton. He didn't have any MBA. He didn't graduate from college. The story I'd love to hear about Epstein is, what was his childhood? Where was he a kid? Where did he go to high school? Who were his parents? We know nothing about his childhood. And that's amazing to me.
Yeah. Well, he didn't go to Groton or Andover. I'll tell you that right now. No. I know we have to take a break.
All right. Thank you. Jake Novak on Another Side of Midnight with Walter Sterling on the Red Apple Audio Networks.
All night long, this is Another Side of Midnight with Walter Sterling. It's Another Side of Midnight with Walter Sterling. Now, to the Bernard McGurk Studios, here's Walter Sterling.
With the prestigious Jake Novak, who will have complete up-to-date information for us in just seconds, the top five at five. Jake, did you see that your name was in a giant newspaper ad today? Did you see that?
I did, and when the first ad started rolling, and I also thank John Casmatinas, our owner-operator, for promoting all of our weekend stuff with those ads, I went to my local 7-Eleven, which, by the way, is vital for me. I grew up in the South across the street from a 7-Eleven.
Yeah, you
became addicted to that.
Yeah.
So I have two that I can walk to from my home, which is very important to me. I went to the 7-Eleven in the evening of that day and bought about three New York Post to send to some friends and my parents. And the man behind the counter, obviously one of the owners, looked at me very curious, like, why is this guy at 8 p.m. buying three New York Posts? And he was so curious that I opened it up and showed him the ad. Now he's my biggest fan. I have the Punjabis in the South Shore, Long Island are my big fans. So that was my moment,
impressed.
You had in the subway.
I'm impressed that at 8 p.m. they had any left.
Mm.
Because the distribution diminishes every month. They like each of these newsstands get two.
Yeah, yeah.
By noon, they're all gone. Yeah, I was such a loser on the subway.
No,
and it was
great.
Like a real subway. It wasn't the 4, 5, 6. It was a 2.
Yeah, I like that story. I love interacting. One of my favorite stories about the subway is, you know, my father is this great, great theologian and scholar and rabbi and professor.
You have to say who he is.
His name is David Novak.
There you go.
And he looks very secular, though, and especially when he's wearing a hat. You can't tell, you know, what his ethnic background is. And there were times when I would be on the subway with him and a very Orthodox Jew would be studying a very esoteric text just quietly in their chair. And as my dad would walk by to exit the subway, he would say, you know, look at page 36A. You're going to see a very interesting divergent argument from where. And the shocked look on their face, like as if they'd seen an angel. Oh, I didn't expect that. I mean, so those are some of my favorite stories. So yours is similar to that. I like that one.
I like the fact that John Catsimatidis invests in promoting anything on the radio, and the fact that he promotes weekends is an amazing and wonderful fact. And the other thing that goes with it is you and I are in an industry that's contracting, and he keeps making this operation bigger. He keeps hiring people. He keeps adding live shows. He's committing radio. He's committing radio.
It's an important meeting. I've spent all these years, 32 years, producing and also doing some on-air work on television. And I love the fact that it's all on my shoulders on radio. People are hanging on your voice. You don't have graphics. You don't have video. You don't have any of those other things. We have all these other great other parts of the WABC radio empire that includes social media and video. There's plenty of that you can watch as well. But at the end of the day, it's your voice, your experience, your interpretation, and everyone's hanging on you and your voice. And I kind of like it. It's pressure, but I like it.
Yeah, it's a solitary medium. The common trait of everybody who works in radio is we are repulsed by the phrase team player. There are no team players here. We have no idea what collaboration means. Walter M. Sterling, yet another side of Midnight. Great to be with Jake Novak. Back tomorrow night with Rolls Cold Heart with an update on the missing Major General.